This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It is 7:44. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning to you. Joining us for the Israel Report this morning is Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch. He's from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. He's also the former director of the military prosecution for Judea and Samaria. Shavuot Tov, a very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us this morning. Lots and lots to talk about. Let's begin with the Israel's attack on Yemen and on the Houthis. What's come out about this operation?
So good morning, Howard. Good to be back with you again. What we're understanding about the strike in Yemen is that really the context. We're talking about these Yemeni, the Houthi terrorists, who have been terrorizing not only Israel, constantly shooting ballistic missiles at us, but also really impeding all the free flow of goods and services through Bab el-Manda, through those straits that really Yemen controls, that thin strip of sea between Djibouti and Yemen. So what we saw really in the last few weeks, I think, is a buildup of intelligence on the Israeli side, understanding where the Houthi leadership is situated, where they move around, when do they meet, and how can they be eliminated? Because these are really international terrorists that have been terrorizing the world for a very long time. And now it needed to be a change of tactics, not only destroying their military capabilities, but also their personnel starting to pay a very, very high and personal price for the terrorism. And that's, I think, what we saw in this strike, a combination of strikes on terror infrastructure and terror personnel coming together, really taking it up a notch from where we had been before, really targeting the heads of the terrorist organizations in the same way as we did with Hamas, with Hezbollah, and even to a certain extent with the Iranians.
There's been a lot of reporting and false reporting, no surprise, talking about the Prime Minister of Yemen, Israel, eliminating the Prime Minister of Yemen. What is the actual situation in the country in terms of the political situation there?
Well, so I have to say I'm not a great expert on the internal Yemeni workings. But there is a very, very clear line between the different areas in Yemen that are run by the different groups. There's the Houthi groups that claim much of their governance based on their taking of control. I wouldn't exactly say that they're an elected a democratically elected group. And then on the other hand, you have the rebel or the opposition groups that control other really vast areas of Yemen, where you basically divide in the country into north and south, where that control is between those different groups. And so the Houthi leadership isn't something which is really the established, recognized leadership by everybody within Yemen, let alone around the world.
It's just remarkable, but it also sends a very, very strong message, doesn't it, to not only to the Houthis, but to any other terror leaders, that we'll find you.
Well, I think that's part of the message that Israel has been trying to really purvey throughout the war, that anyone who attacks Israel will eventually pay and will eventually be eliminated, whether it be the lowest foot soldiers and going all the way up to the top. And Israel has really successfully carried out not a small of operation, amount of operations that have focused on the terror leadership in the understanding that they are the ones that really pull the strings. And as much as you can weaken the leadership, so you're probably going to be able to at least put an obstacle in the way of further. Obviously, sometimes when you take out some of these leaderships, more despicable terrorists come up. That's what we had when Mousavi was killed, and then he was replaced with Hassan Nasrallah. So you don't always know who's coming next, but the understanding is that taking out the leadership is really a concrete obstacle for continued operations, and so it's something that's been done quite successfully.
In terms of talking about taking out leadership, I was chatting earlier with listeners about the elimination of the Hamas spokesperson. How significant is that in terms of the Israel's either intended operation in Gaza City or a move towards some form of resolution?
So really what's amazing, Howard, is that the world is talking about the idea that Israel took out Hamas's spokesperson as if he were like this independent, neutral guy. But that's not the truth. Abu Abeda was part of Hamas's decision-making process. He was the face of Hamas to the outside world, to the Arabic world. When he said what was happening with the hostages, that's what they took as the gospel, as it were. When he said these are going to be the military operations that are coming up, it wasn't because he was just guessing. It's because he was an integral part of that Hamas terror infrastructure and really leadership. And so taking him out has I think, a tremendous effect, not only on Hamas's ability to project to the rest of the world their propaganda as to what's going on in the Gaza Strip, and on the other hand, it's also taking out one of these leadership figures. I think what's interesting to see, Howard, and possibly is worthwhile delving more deeply into, is a report in the Saudi press. Now also regarding Abu Abeda, but really regarding the last lie that Abu Abeda and Hamas were spreading about the starvation in the Gaza Strip. That's where you see Abu Abeda really kicking into a really full gear in his propaganda warfare. And the Saudis are saying, stop complaining about the starvation. There's plenty of food in the Gaza Strip. There's meat, there's the shawarma, there isn't that.
That's
lack.
Incredible.
Really, it's incredible. And so that's part of that whole mechanism of understanding how you take out these key figures in the terrorist organizations and suddenly diminish their capabilities and at the same time allow space for other organizations, other news agencies, in this case, to come up and say a different story. And Dafka the Saudis.
It really is incredible. Why do you think that they have chosen to do that? Because we see different messages from Saudi from time to time.
Well, so I think that the Saudis have been trying to find the right equation to move forward to, on the one hand, promote some type, and definitely it's some type and definitely not statehood, some type of autonomy, of self-determination for the Arabs in Israel, in Gaza, Judea, and Samaria. But at the same time, if you look at where they're trying to get to in that move, they certainly don't see themselves being subjected to the whims of either Hamas or of Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah. They want to make their own policy. They want to move forward with the normalization. They see the financial, the economic, the diplomatic benefits that could be reaped from normalization. And I think they're just trying to make sure that what's been termed as the Palestinian problem doesn't continue to hold the entire Arab world hostage to the whims of the rejectionists and the terrorists, but rather allows them to move forward as well.
It is interesting to see that that although that they are reporting this way and making these statements, the Western media is still lagging very, very far behind. Why do you think that is, that we often or lately are starting to see a much more measured approach coming from the Middle Eastern and Arabic news outlets, but we aren't seeing it in Western media?
Well, you're just seeing this Western media being taken over by a narrative of, unfortunately, of lies that has no connection to the truth or objectivity. And just look at what happened a few weeks ago, where you had a decision of, on the one hand, Macron to move forward and being congratulated by the entire world, Western media, for moving forward on this idea of recognizing a fake Palestinian state. And on the other hand, a decision of the Arab League, basically taken on the same day, calling, incredibly, for Hamas to disarm and to release the hostages and to end the war. And yet you saw that disparity. Western leaders promoting statehood for a fake state, and the Arab leader saying, you know what, Hamas has dragged us into this disaster, and we have to get out of it. And unfortunately, the Western press is just pushing the Hamas narrative, the Hamas propaganda, in its almost blind hatred of Israel, and ignoring what really is the best interest, both of the Middle East and of the people in the Middle East.
It is really just so disappointing that this is the state of media worldwide. We can't be shocked anymore, but we certainly can be quite horrified. Let's also talk about the fact that two bodies that were being held and two hostages, bodies of hostages, have been recovered. How did this, what do we know about this?
So really we know very little about this entire operation. We know the bottom line. We know that Israel, as part of its military operations in the Gaza Strip, is operating all the time to locate the hostages, whether it be the dead hostages or the live hostages, and to bring them home. We're still talking about these genocidal terrorists holding 48 hostages. We believe that at least 20 of them, based on the last statements that came out, are still alive, and another 28 bodies. And unfortunately, the terrorists understand our Jewish sensitivity to the bodies, to the hostages, and they're trying to leverage them against them, against us, for both military and political gain. And so every day that Israel moves forward and is able to release another hostage and another hostage, and to bring these hostages home, not via some type of surrender to Hamas and giving up on military positions. So that is a tremendous step forward. And really, it's an expression of Israel's commitment to the hostages, to bring them home.
So it's just the most incredibly sad situation that this becomes a relief for the families, and this allows closure, even though the ending is absolutely tragic. Were these part of the 50 or 51 that we have been counting in Gaza?
Yes, indeed, it was. They were part of the 50 hostages that were still being held in Gaza. We're talking about the numbers don't really say anything, but it's harsh. It's 696 days, excuse me, since the October 7 attack. We're talking about the distress of these families getting almost into 2 years, and really not knowing what's going on with their loved ones, not being able to get closure, not being able to bring their bodies to burial, and really not knowing when this nightmare is going to end. Is there even a light at the end of the tunnel? And so if we look back just a few months, we ended the last ceasefire when Hamas refused to continue on releasing hostages, where we had 59 hostages still in Hamas's captivity. We're now down to 48, and it's a big number still, without question. But in the meantime, 11 hostages have been brought home. That's and if we're talking about these different agreements that are being discussed now, 11 hostages is almost an entire group. For in return, Hamas wants Israel to pull out of all of its military positions, flood even more the Gaza Strip with aid, and to release hundreds, if not thousands, of murderers back onto the street. So every time we bring back a hostage, it weakens Hamas even more, and it pays our moral debt to our citizens.
Interesting and a fascinating way to look at it, Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. Thank you for bringing us the Israel Report this morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.